blew up yesterday morning. It's this morning was very good and informative. It's nice to have you here, bro. Mm. And I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, hello, and welcome back. It's always quite encouraging when at least one person shows up again after they've heard you speak at the morning. So I'm pleased that you're all here. Hopefully that something I can share with you tonight will be of practical use to you. Because for those of you who were here this morning, you remember I was talking about the pain of the question mark? This rings a bell for you. You seem to be cottoned on. I'm really dunce here. I'm a bit slow. So when I ask you a question, if I can have a head nod or a amen, brother, that would really help me. So I just know who's on board, who remembers, so I know how to work it from there. Is that going to be okay?
Amen,
brother. Great. The sides are doing well. The back, I've got my eye on you lot. So this morning I was talking about the pain of the question mark. And tonight I really want to help you find where is this pain? And no, it's not the person sitting next to you. Where is this emotional bruise in your life? Well, what does this even look like? And we can use a sort of fluffy language, but what does it actually mean in a concrete world and for our life? And so tonight I want to show you how to find that, because the amazing thing is that I find is that most people don't have a clue about these emotional bruises, these unbearable feelings. And the thing about them is they are so powerful that they are the very things that are shaping your life. Now, many of you will tell me that Jesus is your master, but if I put pressure on your emotional bruise, will discover that this bruise is your master. It is that powerful. It is powerful enough to cause you to avoid certain people, certain events, certain conversations that you know you need to have, and it will detour you into other habits, ways of being, that in hindsight, you'll look at it and you'll go, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. And so I want to talk about what it is, how to find it, and what you do with it tonight. And then on that Wednesday-Thursday combo, I want to follow up from what we talk about tonight and look at, so what's the effect of these emotional bruises in your relationships? Because they are the very things that will cause relationships to disintegrate, to break down and fall apart. So I want to teach you what you do about that and what that actually looks like. Does that sound okay? Well, you're slowly getting there, aren't you? I need encouragement here. Because the emotional bruise is like what I describe as an emotional allergy. And or a button that's been pushed. Does anyone ever use the term, you know, that person knows how to push my buttons? You've used that? Yeah. That person knows how to get under my skin. Well, what you're talking about is that person is getting close to my emotional bruise or my emotional allergy. Now, to talk about something like an emotional allergy, that sounds a bit odd. But I use it for a very specific reason. See, tell me, how many here have a physical allergy? One, two, three. What are your allergies? What are you allergic to? Hay fever?
Sticking plaster.
Sticking plaster. Yeah. It's that latex thing, yeah. What's that?
Iodine.
Oh, well, that's unusual.
Washing potatoes.
Yes. Oh, okay, sorry. Now, everyone who laughed feels really bad. Anyway, who else has an allergy?
Dairy milk.
Dairy milk, yeah.
Pollens.
Suntan lotion. So for those of you who've got the allergies, or at least were brave enough to mention yours, what are some of the physical symptoms that you get if you've got, if you encounter this substance?
Sneezing.
What's that?
A rash.
Yep. Skin irritation. Rash. Yep.
Trouble breathing.
Yeah.
Itchy eyes.
Runny nose. You could be an ad, couldn't you? But you really need to... My mum is allergic to nuts, all manner of nuts. so allergic that her windpipe, she goes into anaphylactic shock, that she would actually stop breathing. So she carries with her a pill that if she has the pill quick enough, it can alleviate the symptoms. But if she's not quick enough, she has an EpiPen to jam it into her side so that it will just reduce all the symptoms. Now, you see, the interesting thing about those physical allergies that you were talking about then is that the thing that's the most damaging and the problem is not the substance. It's your body's reaction to the substance. Did you realize that? That's what those medicines are about, or the EpiPen is about. It's about stopping the symptom, the reaction to that substance. See, it's one of these bizarre things that, like for my mum, other than the way her body reacts, nuts are harmless. And so the interesting thing with that is that if you put the substance in, the substance doesn't cause the problem. It's the body's interpretation of the substance. It goes, danger, I can't cope with that, immune system, kick in, and in fact, immune system overreact. And it's your immune system overreacting that's causing you the problem. Now let me ask you here, has anyone here, just in the normal course of your life, in your day-to-day relationships, has anyone ever overreacted? We have a few of you. Now, why have you overreacted? Because there is a substance, metaphorically speaking, that you've encountered that your body, your brain is saying, danger, danger, this is not good. Time to kick my immune system, my reaction system, into gear to protect me. Now, what you've experienced, is it actually fatal? Is it actually dangerous? No, because in hindsight you go, oh, now I feel really silly that I acted like that. But you see, that's what's going on. And your brain thinks that this allergy, emotional allergy, is so dangerous. It has organized your life without you necessarily knowing it so that you will do everything and anything to avoid it. So in fact, it may well be that no one's really pushed your buttons for a long time. Not in the full strength of it. And the reason for that is you know how to avoid it. With what? Your fig leaves. Your survival kits. So I want to talk you through what's going on in the normal course of reaction to this emotional substance. This feeling that you have in your brain, generally speaking, has come from usually some other time in your life, some early time in your life, often but not always your childhood. And at that point, as a child, when you encountered an experience, as a child, with a child's emotional strength and resources, you thought, I can't cope with this. This is too big. And it felt overwhelming. And it probably was overwhelming. And so your brain then goes and it takes the feeling and it puts it into the filing cabinet of your mind and closes the door, but leaves trigger points to know when to give you that feeling again. It may happen when you're older and you experience something that feels traumatic or is traumatic. When you encounter something that just shakes your world, where your brain says, I don't have the resources to cope with this, then your brain will also scoop up that feeling as an emotional bruise and put it in your filing cabinet. Now, the bruises, the feelings, are things like feeling alone, inadequate, feeling displaced, feeling a failure, feeling unloved, feeling like you're hearing conflict. It could be all manner of things. You see, for me, one of my unbearable feelings, one of my emotional bruises, actually came because as a young boy, I was too young and I watched a movie and it went, and so I had this horrific sense of what sharks do. And so now for me, if I go into the sea and I start swimming out a little way, it doesn't have to be big or deep. I'll hear do 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 do. And you know the thing with Jaws? He was always behind you. So I know it doesn't matter if I can't see any sharks and they wouldn't be here. I know, according to Jaws, they come into shallow water, warm water, it doesn't matter, and he's always behind you and you'll never survive. Now, emotionally, that's what my 7-year-old brain stored up and put in the filing cabinet. Now, at other times, I mentioned this morning that I grew up as a latchkey kid. So for me, the sense, for a long time, of being alone just weighed on me. And so my brain stored up that feeling and put it in the filing cabinet of my mind. When I was 15, my dad decided to leave my mum. He had found another woman, he went off, he married her, and I was the only child at 15 left at home with my mum. And I remember standing as she cooked the tea and this look on her face, and I thought, tonight, I cannot ask you how you are, because it would be too painful for me. And what I realized back then was I'm a child in an adult's world and I can't cope. I can't cope with your emotional pain. And so I felt inadequate. And so my brain stored up that feeling and put it in the filing cabinet. And so for the rest of my life, I've carried on from there until I discovered them and learned how to begin to heal them. I would avoid them. I would perform, I would want to put on a show, I would wear my mask, I would seek to cultivate favor with people just so I'm not alone. I would do all manner of things just so that I could keep away from this feeling. And so you will have, all of you will have your own stories, your own experiences, but there will be those feelings that if I was to inject that feeling into your brain right now, it would give you the heebie-jeebies. You would hate it. Now, if you said to someone else, oh, I just can't stand not being heard. Someone else went, oh yeah, it's not pleasant, eh? And you go, no, you don't get it. I can't stand it. It feels like it will overwhelm me. It feels like I don't have the resources to cope. So what will feel overwhelming for one person, what one person is allergic to, another person can actually cope with. So some of these feelings, you look at them and you go, yeah, none of them are really pleasant, and that's true. But for you, there are some that give you the heebie-jeebies and that give you the shiver down your spine. So I want to do an exercise which will help you find where your heebie-jeebies are. Is that okay? So we'll have a piece of paper and we'll use that in a minute, but I want to show you, take you through, this is the way your brain reacts when something's gone on that you don't like, when you've come across one of your unbearable feelings, or at least you're coming close to your unbearable feeling. So sometimes you will react and overreact, not because you're fully experiencing it, but because you know you're within the neighborhood of it. So what happens is something will occur, and this funny thing, that's my picture for your unbearable feeling, your emotional bruise. I haven't come up with a better one than that, so most people get it, but if you know of a better way to draw it, let me know. And better way that I can draw it, and I'm not an artist. But someone or something will push into this bruise, will cause your brain to go, I know how you should feel, and it reaches into the filing cabinet, and it wants to dump this horrible emotion in you. Something occurs, someone doesn't listen to you, someone cuts you off, someone turns and gives you a cold shoulder, you don't do well, people laugh at you, you feel humiliated. So whatever the feeling is, something's done it to trigger this feeling. Now your brain hates that emotion so much that it will not stay with that feeling very long. It will move to a secondary emotion really quickly. And because you feel like this is going to overwhelm you, it's going to crush you, it feels like your very existence is at stake. And so your brain puts you into fight or flight mode. And fight, flight, or freeze mode. And so one of the other feelings that it will generally choose correlates with the fight, flight, and freeze response. Anyone want to take a guess at what they are?
Anger.
Anger. Oh, well done. You've done this before. Anger is one. Anger says, this won't happen to me. I'm going to draw up my strength so you won't make me feel this way. And so we'll move to anger to send out like guard dogs to tell someone to back off. Now, anger is one. What's another one? What's the flight response?
Anxiety.
Thank you very much. And what's the freeze response? Oh, that's trickier, isn't it? This will need so much explanation that I just won't explain it. The freeze response is depression. You see, anger says this won't happen to me. Anxiety says this might happen. Any time that you get yourself into an anxious state, what your brain is saying is danger. There's a feeling lurking nearby. Something could happen, and you're going to feel it. So if I asked certain people here, could you come up here and just talk in front of the crowd? Your anxiety level would go up. Because I heard an amen, didn't I? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're too right, bro. Yeah. Because the fear of failure, or specifically the fear of humiliation, would send the heebie-jeebies up you. And then there's depression, which is the sense that this is happening to me. Now, all of these have their variants. You know, you can feel irritated and frustrated with someone. You can feel anxious, worried. You may say you're concerned. Or they may have bigger brothers like rage and panic. Depression could just feel glum and blue. But what happens is that your brain will put you into the secondary emotion really quickly. And then what you'll do, the next two things that will occur, is that you'll now tell yourself something in your brain. You're now self-talk in such a way that's about to justify the behavior you're about to do. How dare they talk to me like that? Doesn't he know I need this to be treated well? Why have they picked me out? That's so unfair. That's so inconsiderate. Your brain will start to talk in such a way that it will justify behavior that's about to come out of you. And that's where you'll begin to overfunction, overreact, or underfunction and underreact. Now, not you personally, but people you know. When they overreact or underfunction, what do they do? What do you see coming from them? What's the behavior that comes from them?
Get red in the face.
There's red in the face, yep.
Controlling,
yeah. In what way are they controlling, though? What's the behavior that you're labeling as controlling? You didn't realize you had to think on a Sunday night, did you? We'll come back to you. Someone else?
Raised voices.
Raised voices, yep, raised. I'd even go so far, you say, can be, voices, not voiced. Yelling. I'll just add that one in as a starter for 10. Keep going. What else?
Blame shifting.
Blame shifting, great. Yep, more.
In your face confrontation.
Yeah, like in your face confrontation. You've been having meetings with Mick, haven't you? I don't know what I'm spelling there. Yep, in your face confrontation.
Physical violence.
Yep, physical violence. Good, keep it coming.
Crying.
Yep. Noticed a man said that as an overreaction.
Sulking.
Yeah, sulking. Yep, keep coming. What else?
Avoidance.
Avoidance, good. Yep, what else?
Self-harm.
Yep, good. So avoidance, self-harm. Yep. What else?
Other times that it happened, like remembering the past.
Oh, you become historical. Yep, good. What else?
Withdrawal.
Yeah, we've got avoidance, but we'll put withdrawal as well. Yep, what else?
What about mood swings?
Yep, what about them?
Where
when someone's always in a bad mood every day.
Yep, and there is a reason for they're always in a bad mood. Yeah, that was one where the bad mood or the anger has actually become their friend. But here we're looking at, so there's a, what we'd say, they're in a grump. Because the anger's an emotion, but we know what we're talking about when someone's a bit grumpy. Yep, what else? Yeah, we got that. Keep going. I know, you're trying to read my handwriting. Believe me, it's up there. Yeah. What else? Standing up?
And definite, you know, body language change.
Body language change, good. We're going to move over to here. Body language, what else?
Distancing themselves from you.
Yep.
Like, so if they say, I don't want to see you, I don't want to talk to you.
Yep, distancing, good. Yep, keep going.
Intimidation,
but what are you doing to intimidate a person?
I think it was that standing over.
Standing over? Standing over, I should have come to you first, throwing, kick the cat. There was something else. What was it? Throwing, kick the cat, standing over,
slamming doors.
Anyone tried to communicate with a loved one non-verbally, just using the door? Ka-chunk. Yes. Yes, we'll put that in this category. Anything else?
Put downs.
Put downs, yep. So put downs, name calling. Hold on, name calling. Tantrums, was it? Yep. Humiliating. So what are they doing to humiliate, though?
Belittling.
Belittling, so talking derogatory, talking in a belittling way, talking in put downs. Yep. Yeah, so we've got some of that. Keep going. I hear that. That may be because of this, but it's because of the bruise, but it may not be. But you're right. Discriminating can often be because behind it there is a fear.
Bad language.
What's that?
Bad language.
Bad language. Swearing, we'll say.
If it's someone that you know well, you might know what their bruises are, and you deliberately push those bruises and retaliate.
Deliberately being, your retaliation.
I think also references to maybe others in the family that are, one assumes is like the person you're talking to.
Right. You're just like mum. You're just like dad. You're just like the sister. Yeah, I know your sort. Yeah. Well done. What's that? It's part of put down. And they're put downs, absolutely. Hello. No action at all. Yep. And so with that, there's also procrastinating, perfectionism. Yeah, but no action. Yep. Now, I know you can't really read my writing, but have I got yours up here? Because if I haven't, I want to hear it.
What about laughing?
Laughing, yeah. Inappropriate laughter or laughing someone off. Yep. Depends on the context, but yes.
Using hyperbole, like never.
Oh, never and always. Yep. There's also things where, because of it, you will say yes when you actually want to say no. Do you know of a term, if I use the term pretend agreement, do you know what that actually is? Because I imagine every one of you is in a pretend agreement somewhere in your life. And a pretend agreement is where it looks like externally by your words and your actions you're in agreement with what's going on, but internally your heart's saying, no, I don't want to do this, I don't want to be here, I never agreed to this, when can I get out of this, why did this happen? You're living under obligation. Now if you're really spiritual, you're going to call it faithful, but it's not.
Martyrdom.
Is that the stench of a burning martyr I smell? Exactly, martyrdom. That's fine, you go enjoy yourself. I'll just stay here with the kids, just me and the kids, again. So we know there's all manner of techniques and tricks that we will pull. And you see, in your brain, because of what's gone on, all of this feels justified. Now I'm going to get you to do an exercise in a second, but I just wanted to ask, Does that actually make sense? And have you got any questions on it? Thank you. I was sensing I was brilliant, but thank you for confirming that. That's right. So what I'm going to get you to do is, I'm going to get you to do this to find your own bruise. And so you're going to do it backwards. So we're going to pass out. Can we do this, Mick? Can you pass out these sheets? So it's one of, it's this that I put up on the board, but with gaps. And so in the top sheet, you can feel free to write this in and then do this in the bottom sheet where you're going to do your exercise. So now all of you giggled before when I asked you, have you ever overreacted? But what I want you to do is I want you to think of the last time you overreacted. If someone can't remember the last time or a recent time you overreacted, come and talk to me and I'll see if I can push your buttons. But what I want you to do is I want you to think of the last time you overreacted, and you're going to start in the behavior column. You're not going to have to share this, by the way, so please be honest. It is for your sanity and everyone else around you. So I want you to think, when you last overreacted, what was the behavior that came from you? Does anyone need a pen? Who needs a pen? One. Good. Two.
And return the pen.
Anyone else? I see that hand. Whoops, a daisy. Anyone else need a pen? Right at the back. Wait. Anyone else? Anyone?
Yep.
Yep. There you go, Matt. And you too, buddy. There we go. And that's it for pens. Okay, so I'm going to lead you through this. I'll talk you through it. The first thing I want you to do is write down when you overreacted, what was the behavior that came from you at that time? And when you've done that, give me a head nod or an amen sort of high five so I know when you've done it. Yep. That was quick. I got some few quickies here. That's great. Yep. The next thing I want you to think of, once you've written down the behavior you did, I want you to think, what were you telling yourself that meant that behavior was okay? In the sense of, how dare they can't do that, this, I don't deserve this, this isn't fair, something along those lines. After you do the behavior, you think, now what was I telling myself that said this behavior was okay? And it may have been things like, they're being mean, I can't believe this, this is unreasonable, I don't deserve this, why don't they back off? I've given them messages, anything like that. If you don't fully get it, it's not a biggie because this isn't the crunch of the exercise. But see what you can do. That's under the self-talk. Self-talk is, what are you telling yourself? Once you've written down a few of the thoughts that you've done there, I want you to pick out, and it may be one of these or a variant of one of these, but what was the emotion that was obvious to you at the time? Was it one of these? Was it anger? And it often is. Anxiety? Was it feeling glum, blue, depressed? What would you say? Has everyone got one of these emotions or in a variant on this? We up to there?
Yeah, all of them.
Only you can, Emma. That's fine. No, you can't have more than one. But what I want to ask you is, what was the strongest? So if you're feeling anxious and angry, that's often, that's common, or having a combo. But what I want to say is, what was the strongest feeling for you at the time? So have we got that? You're there? Okay. Now let's hope this works. This is the killer question here. When you think about the way you were obviously feeling at the time, angry, anxious, depressed, something like that. If I was to peel back that feeling, if I was to peel back the anger, the anxiety, whatever feeling was, if I was to peel it back, what other feeling is lurking underneath that you don't want to feel? How would you name it? Was it disappointed, despair? Was it not feeling heard? Was it rejected? Was it inadequate, alone, unloved, abandoned, displaced, conflict, fear of conflict, humiliation? Now just show me, give me a hand signal or something like that that says you've got something. You think you found it. You think you found one. Well, you've done really well. That's a good proportion. Now, I need to test whether you've actually found it or you've just found something similar. What I want you to do is think about this. If you had to think about that feeling and know that someone was to inject it into your brain, the fullness of that feeling, whether it's to be rejected, alone, abandoned, whatever it was, if I injected that feeling with all its full intensity in your brain, how bad would that be for you? On a scale of 1 to 10, if I said 1 was, oh, yeah, it's okay, and if I said 10 is, oh, that's hideous, what number would you give it? So even beside that, write down a number beside it. You see, if someone says to me, oh, Richard, I think it was about a 4 or 5, then I'll say, this isn't the unbearable feeling. This is probably an unpleasant feeling, but there's another feeling lurking nearby. If someone says, oh, it was an 8, 9, 10, 1,000, then I probably know, yet we're probably closer to getting to finding it. So if it's not a high number for you, it may well be that it's not actually the emotional allergy, the bruise. That makes sense? And you see, what you've just done, most of you, I imagine here, is you've for the first time discovered a bruise, a button. And now that you know where your enemy lies, now you can begin to do something about it. But before I move on from that, was there any questions on that exercise? Yes. You're stuck on this? On what it is. That's fine. We can talk later. But partly it's thinking, what was so bad in that incident for me? Why was that such a problem? Why was it even an issue? Why did I get angry, anxious, depressed? What was lurking underneath?
Excuse me, do you think if you thought of another example, you might have a different bruise?
Yes. Often people will have 3 or 4 major allergies. So yes. So all you've done here is find one. But the thing is, what I've just given you as an example of what to do is something that you can do on yourself the next time you overreact to find out, is it the same UBF unbearable feeling lurking underneath, or have I got a different one? And you see, this is also an exercise that you can do if you were ever working with someone who came to you and said, you know, I've just, oh, that person's just pushed my buttons, or I'm pulling my hair out, or something's not good, or, oh no, we've just had an argument, something hasn't gone. If you've been given permission to work with someone, you take them through this exercise and you can actually help them find a bruise underneath. Now, in that's now finding it. The question is, what do we do with it? And I have 10 minutes to answer that. Maybe. It depends on how good this gets, eh? Yeah, that's right. So the thing is with this bruise, there are four main things that you do to downgrade the intensity of the bruise to begin to heal the allergy. Now, I'll give it to you. I'll run you through what they are. You can write them down on your piece of paper. I don't expect you to get a hold of them immediately. I simply, in many ways, want to introduce you to the process of what you need to do here. The first thing is this. You need to relocate the feeling. You can write that. Relocate the feeling. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You see, when your bruise was pushed and you overreacted in that way, that was because there was a feeling that your filing cabinet of your mind had, and it reached for it. Where did this feeling originate? It would have originated, you may well know, that it's originated from somewhere else. See, when you think about the feeling, here's one way to find where this feeling originated, or at least has a significant source. If you think about the way that horrible feeling tastes inside, now think back in your life. When else have you felt like that? What comes to mind? You may need time to sit with that and think about it, but when else have you felt like that? What's a significant time in your life that represents that feeling to you? It may seem to have nothing to do with the situation where you overreacted, but the feeling itself just feels the same. And you see, what's happened in your life is that somewhere, when you didn't feel like you could cope with that feeling, when you felt overwhelmed, you stored up the feeling and you put it in the filing cabinet. And now your brain, anytime it's triggered, because it's got different trigger sources, knows when to give you and dump that feeling on you. And you think, oh, I'm just feeling this way automatically. This is just how life is. This is really horrible. I can't cope. Is it? No. This is simply your brain's best guess at how you should feel in this moment. But the truth of the matter is that the feeling you're experiencing generally is not about now. It's not about this person. It's not about this situation. This feeling actually comes from another time. And so your brain will keep giving you this feeling until you teach it not to. Until you teach it, actually, that was then, this is now. This feeling is not actually about now. Now, if you can identify where it's come from, that's helpful. Because then your brain goes, oh, I see, it wasn't really about now. But if you can't fully identify where it comes from, but you know, yes, I felt like this in the past, that's okay. You know that it does not originate in the now. And one of the problems we fall into is when we believe the feeling that our brain has released is actually telling us the truth about the now situation, when it may well not be. And if we're overreacting, probably isn't. And so the first thing is to relocate the feeling, to actually put it back where it belongs. This feeling isn't about now, it's about another time. That was then, this is now. The second thing you do with the feeling is you downgrade its intensity. You see, when you first experienced that feeling, it would have felt overwhelming. Perhaps you were a child with a child's understanding and you couldn't cope. It was traumatic. You were overwhelmed. But you see, what your brain doesn't realize is that you've grown up. You're no longer that child. You're now a grown man. You're now a grown woman. You have far more emotional strength. And the truth of the matter is, if I injected that horrible feeling into your brain and it sat there, nothing bad would actually happen. Certainly feels like it would, but nothing bad would actually happen. And so the truth of the matter is, this feeling is not fatal, like your brain is telling you. It's actually just unpleasant. And so you downgrade the intensity from unbearable to unpleasant. Yeah, it's not nice, it's not good, but actually I can cope. If I sit with this feeling, it may shake my mind a little bit, but I'll actually be okay. The third thing you do is you answer the lie. You see, inside every horrible emotional feeling that is a bruise from the past, inside it will be a lie. But I hate feeling like I'm a failure. But I hate feeling rejected. But I hate feeling humiliated. But I hate feeling this. Whereas the reality of the matter is this. There is a lie inside all of those feelings. You see, first and foremost, this feeling, I hate feeling like I'm a failure. Well, the truth of the matter is that you can actually never be a failure. Failure is merely feedback on your technique, your method, that you've adopted. So you might have a belief, an understanding, a methodology, a technique that fails you, but you are never a failure. You can never be a failure. And in fact, if you learn from the experience, it never really is a failure. It may be that you hate feeling rejected. That person just didn't ring me up. They didn't text me. I didn't feel included. I hate this feeling of rejection. Whereas the truth of the matter is, you are not a rejected person. In fact, you have never been a rejected person. You may have people in your life who don't like you. You may have had a rubbish upbringing. You may have had some horrible things happen in your life. But you have never been rejected. In the sense that God is the one who dreamed you up, who brought you onto this planet, who died for you, who wants to include you in himself. So have you had other people not like you? Sure. But are you a rejected person? No, you never have been. And so when you discover what the lie is, you begin to find out, okay, Lord, what is the truth here that's the antidote that I need to answer back? What's your perspective here, Lord? And the fourth thing that you do, and you only do it if you've done the first three. If you haven't done the first three, you do not go straight to number four. And number four is you expose yourself to situations where that feeling could crop up. Oh, that sounds like fun. But you see, if you don't have the truth of the other three to hold on to, you'll simply abuse yourself and traumatize yourself further. But if you experience that horrible feeling and you have truth to coach you through that feeling, then in fact you begin to alleviate it. And you see, the truth of the matter is in this, that as much as you may feel at times that you're at the mercy of your mood and your feelings, your brain is actually listening to you to know what feeling to make stronger. So when a feeling gets triggered and gets dumped in your brain, it happens automatically and you go, ah, that's horrible, I don't like that feeling. But then if you go, yeah, I am rejected, I am a failure, this isn't any good, I'm never going to amount to something, I shouldn't have said that, they're not going to like me anymore. If you side with the feeling, your brain goes, ah, so this is the correct emotional response. I'll tell you what, I'll make more of this feeling for you and I'll make sure you feel that way faster than you ever have before. Which is really what you want, isn't it? But in fact, your brain listens to you, and when you begin to side with truth against the feeling, and that's the key, against the feeling, then as you hold on to truth, What happens in your brain is your brain slowly learns, one part of your brain, the emotion center of your brain, slowly learns that it needs to give you a different feeling. And so I'm going to leave you with this analogy of how you do that. Because often when you and people in churches will encounter the truth, they'll say this: I know it up here, I just don't know it in here. And what they're saying is cognitively, the cognitive neocortex of my brain understands it. But the limbic system of my brain, the emotion center, hasn't got it. What they're recognizing there is that your emotions take longer to catch up with truth. And so this is the analogy that I find quite helpful. If you imagined you went to America and you were driving a car in America, so you're driving on the left-hand side of the car on the right-hand side of the road, one part of your brain, the rational, cognitive, logical part of your brain, would say, but of course, this is what they do in America. This is what I need to do. But the emotion part of your brain would be going, this doesn't feel right. I shouldn't be on this side. I need to be on the other side. Now, why do you feel that way? Because your feelings got taught how to feel regarding driving, learning to drive a car, usually here in New Zealand. And so the brain's saying, that doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right. Now, if you side with your feelings at that point, and you swerve to the other side of the road, you hit oncoming traffic. And you wonder why you're the only one driving in the correct direction. And many of you are living your lives with oncoming traffic, wondering why you're the only one getting it right. Whereas, of course, the way you'd get through that is you would go, I know I need to be on this side of the road. I'd use my logical cognitive self. And you would clutch the steering wheel for dear life. And you would tell yourself, you'd talk the truth to yourself. And you'd say, oh, I know this feels weird, but I've got to stay on this side. If I go to the other side, boy, I'm going to be in trouble. I've got to stay on this side. I know it feels weird, but this is the correct side. I have to stay on this side. And as you do that, as you reassure yourself through that, after a while, you now go, oh, this now feels normal. What's happened is the emotional part of your brain has now caught up with the truth. It's been reprogrammed. It's learned, you've taught it that you want to feel a different way because your feelings need to be in line with reality and the truth and not simply be the echoes of another time. So my friend, I think we've just hit or just gone 8. So I'm going to leave it there and hand back to you, Mick, unless you want to do something different.